Welcome to the Guffman. I'm Alex, and with me is James and 14 of our closest, oldest friends to complete this package of expendables. Before we get started, I want to get you to check out our website, themcguffman.com. We've recently done podcasts on the Ocean's 11 trilogy, or I guess we talked about two of them. what did we do the week before that? Oh, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. Earlier this week, I wrote a thing about Boyhood, the Roger Ebert documentary, Life Itself, and People That Applaud the Movies. And yeah, you can check those all out on themcguffinmen.com. Follow us on Twitter at themcguffinmen, no underscores. And yeah, we'll keep you up to date with all of our latest developments. Anyways, thanks for listening to this, and we'll get to the theme song.
Welcome to the MacGuffin Men. And now, here are Alex and James.
All right, here we are.
Here you, me, Alex, Travis, Ivory Hours,
the whole band,
Josh, Emily,
Sarah's been on this podcast too.
Sarah, Spring Sneak on?
No, Spring has never been on the podcast. Okay. Always in spirit though.
Hey, Spring. Sarah Hewitt.
other random people we met once on the street.
all these hilarious jokes are our way of saying that today's episode is about Expendables 13.
Yes, exactly. That was the exact correct number.
Expendables 3.
Yeah.
You know, we're just a little podcast trying to make it big, but yeah. Once in a while, our showbiz connections get us a movie before it's even released in theaters.
Absolutely.
And we are like, we're ahead of the curve on this one.
Yeah, thanks to somebody from Lionsgate for that hookup.
Yeah. We don't want to say the name.
Yeah, no. We don't want to
do that. Yeah, we are talking about the most recent Expendables.
Yep.
I think we'll talk about the leak in a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, but, of course. It bears talking about.
Yes, very.
Not
famously.
That that's how we saw this film.
No, not of course.
Again, connections.
Connections. So we're talking about the first PG-13 Expendables.
Yep.
What do you think of the rating change up for the first time in the franchise?
I don't care. I will say the most interesting thing about watching the first Expendables movie, when I saw it in theaters on opening day, and there's a moment in the first few minutes of the movie where, I mean, the movie starts with an action sequence, and like the first, you know, there's a few minutes of setup, and then the first moment of action is Dolph Lundgren just blowing a guy in half with a grenade launcher, and like there were like audible like whoa in the theater when I saw it, because that's just not and the Expendables, the first Expendables, is one of the most explodiest people movie of all time. I think the fourth Rambo movie beats it for sure, but other than that, I don't think there's a lot of competition. And people just are not used to seeing that that type of violence anymore. I think the Expendables 3 is still a more violent movie than the Expendables 1. It's just you don't see blood, so fine. It's okay, you know?
Right. Wasn't kind of part of the fun of the franchise supposed to be that they can do all the rated R stuff now?
I mean, that was kind of the fun of the first one, which is the only one that's kind of fun, so...
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess Sly said this was to reach a broader audience.
Yeah.
Does that mean people weren't seeing the first one's enough?
I guess they figured the way to reach the youth is to leak your movie 3 weeks ahead of time.
I guess so.
Yeah. I think that was a mistake. And
the rating?
No, not the rating, but caring about a young audience. But yeah, no, the rating I am indifferent towards. I really don't think it would affect the gross all that much. Pretty much anybody that wants to see the Expendables is not getting stopped because of a rating, you know?
Right.
Yeah. 13-year-olds that for some reason want to see the Expendables, I feel like, are smart enough to be able to get into an R-rated movie. Given how dumb I was as 13 and able to finagle my way into some of the movies I saw. Yeah.
Everyone's got that crazy uncle that'll get them in, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, as you said, the first one starts with an action sequence. I think most movies like this do, with a little bit of setup and then right to some people blowing up and being killed who are kind of tangential to the plot.
Yeah.
And sure enough, this one starts with our crew of expendables getting Wesley Snipes, a.k.a. Dr. Death, out of prison.
Yep.
Who we later find out is a co-founder of the Expendables.
Yes.
Kind of one of my favorite jokes in this whole movie is that he says that he's in jail for tax evasion.
Yes.
Right after Wesley Snipes in real life was released from jail for tax evasion.
Yeah, well, I mean, he was initially going to play Terry Crews' role in the first Expendables, but then he had to go to jail.
So, right. But this help. Kind of joke is like the best thing about these movies, right? These kind of in jokes that, you know, poke a little fun at the stars.
Yes. Because that is one of the like four things in this movie I enjoyed. I will say, I went through like all of the movies I've watched this year, movies from this year, movies from previous years. I just sort of like thought about everything I've watched in 2014. This is the worst movie I've watched this year. I hated it so much. And yes, that tax evasion line and the aplomb with which Wesley Snipes delivered it was one of the few things about this movie I actually enjoyed. So yeah, there are those moments of self-awareness that are nice, but and then you get a moment like Arnold Schwarzenegger saying "Get to the chopper" towards the end that I hated. I thought it was so stupid. It was like,
oh, really?
I kept waiting for him to say that line. And that's not, I don't know, there's a weird line that you've got to navigate, and they did not properly navigate it with the Schwarzenegger thing. It felt like, with the Wesley Snipes thing, it felt like something kind of moderately clever, whereas the Schwarzenegger thing felt like they were checking off a box on a checklist, you know?
Yeah, of like, what do we know about Schwarzenegger? What do people still joke about it? What's a memeable line that people still might talk about, and that's it?
The Expendables 2 might have been a worse offender with these things. Like, I think Arnold Schwarzenegger makes something like three plays on his "I'll be back" line over the course of the Expendables 2, and two of them are very close together. Like, it was it's garbage. And then in the middle of that movie, Chuck Norris walks out of nowhere and tells a Chuck Norris joke and then leaves. Keep in mind, this movie came out in 2012. Like, it was just I don't know. Though those things are just so shoehorned in and are clearly not subjected to a second draft of thought. and they just kind of drive me crazy.
But the tax evasion one works.
Yes, exactly. Going back to the thing you were actually talking about, the tax evasion one works.
I don't know. It's just, I feel like that, I do agree with the get to the chopper one. Like, it's, I mean, anybody writing this movie could have put that in there.
Yeah.
It wasn't hard to think up, and you know, exactly, kind of more just a checklist thing. But I feel like that's the fun of these movies, if there is any fun to these movies, is doing that kind of thing.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I think to an extent, but the thing I was thinking about the first one, the second one, some more, and this one, and the things that are fun about those movies are the things that people at least try during. Like Wesley Snipes, this is kind of a big moment in his career because he's got a role in something that people will see. And so throughout the movie, he's trying, you know, whether or not you think...
I found him good in it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Wesley Snipes is charismatic, and when he's trying, he's good. I still think, like, him in Mo Better Blues is, like, one of the more underrated performances of the last, like, 30 years. He's really, really great in that movie. And he has his moments. He's great in White Men Can't Jump. Like, he's so funny in that movie. And all throughout the 90s, he had these moments in some pretty atrocious movies. Like, he's good in Passenger 57, despite Passenger 57. He's good in this, as is Antonio Banderas, who is kind of there for fun. Like, he gets a little annoying, but his first scene is just great.
Yeah, I thought he was really good, too.
Like, yeah.
I mean, Wesley Snipes just hasn't been in anything for a while, and, you know, he's been in the news or whatever, but I kind of hadn't seen anything he had been in.
Yeah. And, well, Blade Trinity is the last notable movie he's in, and that was, like, on the edges of being notable, and that was 2004, probably, maybe 2005.
Yeah, just very quickly, I kind of realized why he did have a career. Like, he is good, and he is kind of just has that natural way about him that can be very entertaining. Mm-hmm. And as you said, even things that, you know, like this aren't necessarily great pieces of film.
Yeah.
You know, he can still be good just in his confined little role. And yeah, I thought he was good. I don't get all the hate for this movie. Like, people are really ripping it up. It was kind of exactly what I was expecting.
It was, yeah. I also hated The Expendables 2. So, like, I wasn't going to see this movie until you suggested we do a podcast on it.
Okay.
So, I mean, I had negative expectations going into it, I guess. But, yeah, I just, I don't know. I feel like, because I think The Expendables tries to be a movie. The first Expendables at least has elements of attempts at being a movie that is, that you could put in people that don't totally rely on who they are. Whereas The Expendables 2 is, because The Expendables 1 is kind of, I mean, it was marketed all around Stallone, but it's really a two-hander between Stallone and Statham. And they have good chemistry, and Statham is great in everything. So it works. And Eric Roberts was a really good villain. The second one, it's more, it was like they figured out that they were a meme and decided to play into it. And so there were so many moments of the Chuck Norris thing, Arnold Schwarzenegger saying, "I'll be back," before leaving, to, and then proclaiming in that space that he would be back again before going back to the first space. Bruce Willis is the only person in that movie that knows how bad the movie is that he's in. And he is like doing the laziest line readings possible. It's great. And Jean-Claude Van Damme, it's another Wesley Snipes thing. It's the first time in a long time he's been in a movie that people will actually see. And Jean-Claude Van Damme is trying in that movie. And as such, he's the most entertaining part of that movie. Dolph Lundgren was enjoyable in the second movie as well, because he got his role beefed up a bit, and he did some work with it, and it was really enjoyable. And so it's all the pieces around them that just are just barely like functioning pieces of a movie. And it's just, the action isn't engaging. The action in this movie was, in the third one as well, was just so boring. And it was, I don't know. Yeah. Just garbage, just horrible movies.
Well, you must have missed someone destroy a tank through X Games powers if you think it was funny.
X Games powers are the most most unbeatable of powers.
It's the most youthful.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so, I mean, to discuss the plot of this one, I suppose. this is Barney Ross, a.k.a. Sly, dismantling the Expendables and building a younger crew.
Yeah. And then remantling the Expendables.
Yeah. Like, I wasn't quite sure about all of that. He's like, "I care about you guys too much. Anyway, these kids, I don't
know." Yeah, anyways, these kids. And you know what's really funny is the second movie, they spend a lot of time setting up this, or the first 25 minutes setting up the new guy in the crew. He's one of the cast-off Hemsworth brothers. And he dies, and like Jean-Claude Van Damme has his one of his lackeys hold up a knife to Hemsworth's chest, and then he does a roundhouse kick into the knife into the kid's chest, and it's amazing. But then Stallone, at his funeral, Stallone's giving this speech about why did he have to die when he's so young and youthful and had so much to live for, and we get to live on. And it's this really horrible monologue, and Stallone is trying so hard, and it's so goddamn funny, and it's all in one take, and it's hysterical in how bad it is. And that's what he's like, why did this young person have to die? And then The Expendables 3 is all about him setting up these young people to die. Like, the logic
for young
is,
people.
Sorry,
like, he's going for young people too. Yeah. Like, he's, when he's talking to Bonaparte or whatever, he wants them like really young and reckless, which is apparently completely antithetical to that speech in the last.
It's so stupid. It's so stupid.
Well, yeah. So Terry Crews is shot, and he gets revenge, I guess. Kind of the point of this one.
Yeah, exactly. And it's funny because the Ocean's movie we didn't talk about was last week, Ocean's 13, is about Elliot Gould being temporarily taken down by the villain. And so it's kind of nice that the third element of both of these trilogies tie into each other in that sense. And the moment where Stallone sees Mel Gibson, aka Stonebanks, is still alive, is hands down the best part of this movie, I think. Because I think he was doing another task and then saw Mel Gibson and dropped whatever he was doing, yelled Stonebanks, and immediately put everybody around him in danger. Like, Caesar gets shot because Stallone is an idiot, right?
Yeah, that sounds accurate.
Okay, cool. Just double checking.
Well,
this is your leader, Expendables. Put Statham in charge. You know shit.
There's a couple leaps of logic in this movie. So
one or two.
Like, in order to tell your team that you want to dismantle them and don't want them to die, you clearly have to explode a helicopter you just landed over your shoulder.
Yeah.
Necessary step.
Yep, I agree. I would agree with that statement.
Like, they really don't do much of, like, covering their tracks or destroying evidence at all in this movie. And then
no, they just destroy everything.
Just to have one more explosion. He detonates a helicopter.
Yeah. God damn, it was so silly.
Yeah, but so they go to the bar to Sly brings them to the bar to break the news, I guess.
Yeah. And Snipes is living that Snipes life. He's got some clean threads on.
Yeah, of course. So they go to, one of those Expendables bars.
Yeah.
I guess.
One of those New Orleans bars where the Expendables go.
Where they drink Budweiser because America.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. Yeah, and they're all very devastated by this news. It causes Dolph Lundgren to drink out of a comically small flask.
Maybe it's a regular size flask and he's just very large.
No, it's a shot flask. Okay. And I don't know why they make them.
Well, and a big part of the first movie is him getting kicked out because he has problems with drinking. And then he seems to die and then is okay and drinking in a bar at the end of the first movie. So I don't understand. They never do anything with his drinking in this movie. He just drinks again and that's fine. Like, it's... Well, They do not have a consistent stance on alcoholism in this film.
No, they don't. No. Did you know who was rumored to play Bonaparte, a.k.a. Kelsey Grammer's role?
I know Nick Cage was rumored to be in this movie, so I assume that would have been the role he would fill, right?
Yeah, that would have been his.
Yeah. I thought Kelsey Grammer was good. Hearing Kelsey Grammer say the word pussy was enjoyable. but yeah, no, I think if you were to give me a choice, I would put Nicolas Cage in it. I mean, I would replace most people in this movie with Nicolas Cage if given the option.
Yeah. I'd like to see him do that lung cancer fake out thing. Yeah. That would have been entertaining.
Yeah.
Even though I think Kelsey Grammer is funny in this and should probably be in more things that are funny that aren't down Periscope.
And he's good in Transformers 4 as well. He's in that. He's a good time.
Yeah.
It's been a big summer for Kelsey Grammer getting that money.
Yeah, it certainly has been.
Yeah.
And so do you want to talk about the new crew that gets assembled?
Ugh. Sure, Kellan Lutz was one of them, which is a name that I keep seeing, but never know why I keep seeing his name. I think he's got a career that's aimed at people like 5 years younger than me, maybe. But yeah, they're just younger and they argue with old people because that's what young people do. They know more about technology because fucking of course they do. I don't know. They were just nothing. They were just, I did not care. Like, and here's the thing about this movie and these characters, right? The reason we care about the Expendables characters in any way, if we do, is because we have had decades of watching them play characters that are kind of memorable, and we're taking those memorable characters and projecting them on the Expendables. These actors have had no time to create these characters. Also, they seem like they're pretty shitty actors, so they're probably not going to do that. And they're being put in a movie with the thinnest of scripts, and there is no good writing for their characters. There's very little good writing in general in this film. And they just have nothing to work with, so there's no possible way we will care about them. And that's sort of why I said Stallone made a mistake in trying to get young people into this movie, is that if you're not going to try to write them good parts, we're never going to care about them. And like, we'll care about the other people that we're just rooting on because they continue to exist, you know? And that's the big difference between those two groups, is that they're both written equally poorly. we just remember a time when, you know, a few of these actors weren't written for terribly all the time. You know?
Yeah, we have a foundation for
most
of these people.
Yeah.
I mean, Randy Couture, not really, but...
Well, yeah.
He was fighting for so long in UFC that he was in a couple action movies. Like, people knew him.
Yeah. I'm talking mostly about, like, the A-list members of the... Like, I don't feel like Antonio Banderas falls into that category as well, just because, I mean, nobody's really, like, crying out for Desperado to be, like, part of rec house's, you know, screening room. And yeah, I think like people like Snipes and Stallone are more of that. And Statham's kind of in the middle because he's still kind of an action star, but on his own merit. But, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. No, I know what you mean.
And Schwarzenegger even more than anybody else, I think.
Well, yeah, when I saw that, you know, this is the one where they get the young cast out, I was thinking, like, you have such a huge cast already.
Yeah.
Like, do you have screen time for four more people? Not really.
No, I mean, even if they didn't have the young cast, they would still barely have screen time for everybody that's actually in the movie.
I think Jet Li's on screen for 4.5 seconds.
Oh, yeah. in the second movie, Jet Li literally jumps out of a plane to exit the film. Like, he's a part of like the first couple action sequences, and then they're just flying somewhere. He's like, oh, I'm getting out here, and jumps out of the plane. It's really great. And I don't think he's back at any point in the movie. But.
Yeah. Then
Sorry, you cut out?
With the whole youthful angle, we should say that this movie is directed by Patrick Hughes.
Yeah.
Who is an Australian director who caught Sly's eye.
Yeah.
And, you know, like the young people in this movie, didn't really have a chance to do much good with it, right?
Yeah, this is not it's not a particularly well-directed movie. I don't think these... What?
It's just not going to make a lot of money, and the script was never great. Like, you know, it's such a big break for this guy to get a Hollywood movie to direct, but...
Yeah. Yeah, but I think my thing is... Because I think if the movie had been good with the leak, I would have felt a little bad for young director because, yeah, he would have no chance. Assuming this movie has its grosses cut quite a bit by the leak, which I don't think is a sure thing. Given the age of a lot of the potential audience members. But yeah, if this movie was made by a good director, I was like, wow, this is a talented new potential auteur that is getting his career ruined. I would be kind of sad about that. And I thought about that before I watched the movie. And then I watched the movie. I'm not going to be sad if he never makes another film. Like, I hope he lands on his feet just, you know, to common courtesy, but I don't care to see anything else he makes.
Like, you didn't want this to be Rian Johnson's first chance a few years ago.
No, exactly. If Brick had been crushed by a leaking scandal, I would have been very upset.
Right. Yeah. So the new team, they're all assembled.
Sure. Yep.
Making fun of the old people for being too old, which never seemed to be the problem with the Expendables. Like, I never quite understood that. Like, there's kind of this thread through the first half of the movie where Sly seems convinced that their age was the problem, but they were doing like insanely age-defying things.
And I know,
murdering hundreds of people pretty efficiently. I would say,
yeah. And apparently, part of that Snipes life is being an expert at parkour. You know, like
and shaving.
Yeah, yeah. I know, that was really great. That was so funny. But the. Yeah, I mean, I know Wesley Snipes is one of the more athletic of the crew, but just at his age to be able to do these types of things is, I mean, yeah, the age was not a problem with Dr. Death, apparently.
No.
He was still very athletic.
Right, but so about halfway through this movie, they kind of start forcing home that apparently age was the problem.
Yeah.
So Sly describes his plan to the new young Expendables.
Yep.
And they say, great plan, if it's 1985, which is a fantastic burn.
I don't even remember that.
Okay, yeah.
But it seems like a line that would be in this movie. I'm not going to call shenanigans on it.
Yeah, I mean, it's right before he describes how he's going to, like, knock out the alarms and all the technology stuff they're going to do to beat the bad guys.
Yep.
Okay, I was going to ask you why 1985?
Why 1985?
You remember the line?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know, because it was the year just before Cobra, just before Stallone made his one of his first big machismo mistakes.
It's the year of Rambo First Blood Part 2.
Yes, which is not good, but Cobra is much more a craziness vanity type of movie.
Right, I just mean, I think Rambo would be one of the characters that, you know, when we're talking about building off that foundation of, like, what we know about these characters, I think it's, you know, it's more Rambo than Rocky.
Yep. It's cool. Know, yeah. I think everything, pretty much everything Barney Ross does is more Rambo than Rocky.
Yeah, I just mean, like, these are the characters we're kind of looking at.
Absolutely.
Right. Mm-hmm. I thought it was funny when, you know, they're in the building and the building that's, you know, wired with C4. And one of our young expendables is able to block the signal through his little tablet phone machine, whatever.
Yeah. I thought it was like a battery pack or something.
I don't know.
But I mean, technology, right?
The technology.
They can do such crazy things now.
Well, that's what I mean. I love that.
There's an app for that and assorted other phrases that we say.
Exactly. And that's what I was getting at. I enjoyed that. You know, he jams the signal or whatever, but it only lasts as long as his little tablet thing is going to last. Like, my battery's at 2%. Hashtag millennial problem. It's going to kill us all.
And then they waste the entire 2% of time explaining to Sylvester Stallone what a hashtag is.
Yeah.
It's a really useful search function.
Right, Barney Ross? Yeah. What is with the what is with the names in this fucking movie?
Sylvester Stallone... I believe is wrote the screenplay for the first movie, co-wrote the story. I don't know. I think it's just kind of like, let's think of the weirdest, manliest names possible. And I guess Lee Christmas is one of them.
Toll Road is one of them.
Pardon?
Toll Road is one of them.
Yeah, and I guess we're also talking about the guy that wrote a script featuring the character Mason the Line Dixon. So.
That's true. That's true.
So, I mean, it's not like he doesn't have this history.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of manly names, let's get to Conrad Stonebanks, which I honestly thought it was Stonebanks the first few times, which I thought just meant rock hard testicles.
Yeah, of course. My God.
The fact that I was like, yeah, that sounds about right for this movie, I think tells you something about this franchise.
That's so funny.
Yeah, I know.
I wish I heard that. Because the first time you hear that name, it's just screams.
I know. Yeah, do you want to talk about that? The screaming of that name? And maybe the casting of Mel Gibson, if you want something of a real question as well.
Yeah, sure. Well, we talked a bit about the Stonebanks thing, him yelling Stonebanks, and how it's basically the reason Caesar gets shot. So I think we've kind of addressed that. Mel Gibson is somebody I've never had that much of an attachment to. So it was kind of more than anything, it was just weird seeing him in a movie. I saw Edge of Darkness, which I think came out in early 2009, which was an action movie directed by Martin Campbell. It was one of his comeback movies, and then The Beaver came out and killed it. But yeah, I hadn't seen him in anything in 5 years, and he was at one point such... an, I don't know, present part of Hollywood culture, and just disappeared. And it was kind of jarring. First time I saw him, it was a little odd. And I remember having a version of that same feeling when I saw Edge of Darkness. But it was a bit more extreme with this. I think they should have had him insulting more Jews to play off his personal troubles, like they did Wesley Snipes. I was expecting that, but I guess they tried to play it safe. I don't know.
You can't do that,
Jake. No, I know. I'm just kidding. I understand why they couldn't do that type of thing. But
shoot for their yarmulkes.
just go so anti-Semitic with it that nobody can call you on it because it's clearly parodying Mel Gibson's anti-Semitic past and probably dumb. Present.
It's dumb Mel Gibson.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, I don't know. Did you have any opinions on Mel Gibson's existence in this film?
I was surprised he was in it. Mm-hmm. Like, I know it's been a long time since this little scandal and people have come back from worse, I guess, but it didn't seem like something Sly would want to kind of align himself with.
Yeah. Well, I think they just wanted somebody, you know?
Yeah, I think it's kind of at a point where you just need to adding people and, you know, who's new in this one? Harrison Ford, but that was to replace Bruce Willis.
Yeah. Wesley Snipes,
again, kind of some legal stuff, but nothing that turned the public against them. Like, people don't care if you don't pay your taxes. People care if you say misogynistic, anti-Semitic stuff.
Yeah, and, I mean, are recorded saying it.
Yeah,
exactly. And Banderas is a new part of this movie, but nowhere near the star level of Gibson, of course.
Right. Yeah. I really did enjoy, really, really thought it was funny. Like, maybe my favorite part of this movie... comic wise, which I guess is my favorite parts of this movie are all comic reasons, intentional or not, is when he's having Stonebanks Gibson is having his conversation with Barney Ross and Statham Christmas is beside him.
Yeah.
And he's like, I can't understand him. I don't even know what language he's speaking. I thought that part was really, really funny.
Yeah. That's
and
good.
It's a funny line. And I think it, I don't know, there's a good, you know, I guess bit of Mel Gibson performing behind it that made it a little better, but I was never, you know, really attached to Mel Gibson. I was never really close to the Lethal Weapon movies. They were a bit ahead of my time, especially at the beginning, obviously. Yeah. I don't like Braveheart.
Huge conspiracy theory fan though.
I actually do kind of like, I really like a few things about conspiracy theory.
I know
theory.
You do.
And that just needed a better director. So I, whatever.
Richard Donner's a good director.
I really feel the direction is what makes that movie a bad movie.
Okay. I mean, like, I saw it once when I was 10, so.
Yeah, no, there's tons of pieces. And then they put Mel Gibson and Julia Roberts in poor directing altogether. And
gotcha.
Obviously, that didn't make for a good movie. But yeah, I thought that part was funny. And I think he's like, you know, completely passable in this, but doesn't really do much to make the movie any better.
Yeah.
Or worse, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I thought he was kind of mailing it in too for the most part. There were a couple moments as well, but I don't know. I don't, if you told me most of these people read their lines 10 minutes before they were supposed to read them for the first time, you know, I wouldn't be surprised. And I think Antonio Banderas would be the only, maybe Wesley Snipes as well, but Antonio Banderas would be the exception to that. And I think it's because he made up 80% of his lines.
He does that thing though. Like he just, Snipes, I mean, like he just has a unique line reading. Like I know he'll say, I forget the line, but he just puts the word yeah at the end. Yeah. And I know that's like such a small thing, but like at least he's kind of having fun with it and kind of making it his own.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Wesley Snipes is good in this movie.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's like I said, he has a reason to try that somebody like Stallone doesn't.
Right.
Hmm. Sorry. What'd you say?
Nothing. Okay. I said, and then I coughed.
Okay.
We talked about how we feel about Bruce Willis in the last one. Should we mention his whole story about?
I would love to because I think it's great. And I side with Bruce. But the story is Bruce Willis was supposed to be in this movie. They referred to his character.
Search. He's reprising his role. He's the second one.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And he was in the first one as well. One of the most interesting things about the first movie is that Trent, Schwarzenegger's character, and Ross are brought to this church by Church, Bruce Willis's character. And I thought that it's the most notable scene to talk about in that movie because it's the scene with the three biggest stars in it. It's the only scene Schwarzenegger's in the movie for. And it's bringing these people all together, these three action stars. And the person that's in charge of the room is Bruce Willis. And I found that really interesting and really cool because John McClane kind of was the character that started to do away with the Schwarzenegger, Stallone, unbeatable action hero types of characters. And I thought that was really interesting. Anyway, now they've got beef. Bruce Willis wanted $4 million for 4 days of work. They offered him three. He decided to not do the movie, which basically means he didn't want to do the movie unless they paid him a ridiculous amount of money. And since they didn't want to pay him his proclamation of what is a ridiculous amount of money instead of theirs, he just didn't do the movie. And I just don't think he wanted to do the movie, and so he priced himself out of the job. And I'm totally fine with that. I've priced myself out of jobs on a much smaller scale. But, you know, sometimes you just don't want to actually do these things. And I think judging by Bruce Willis's performance in the second one, he realized pretty quickly after he got there that he didn't want to be there. And it wasn't worth doing again unless he could buy two houses. Right. And Stallone charmingly took to Twitter and tweeted about how Harrison Ford is a real actor because he's willing to work for less money or something. I don't remember his exact choice of words, but I think it's pretty close to that.
Yeah, he's willing to slum it for $3 million for 4 days' work.
It's pretty funny to me.
For his craft.
Did you notice how bad Harrison Ford's stand-in was in this movie?
No, I did not.
Oh my god! Every time they show the back of Harrison Ford's head, whatever his character's name, the guy is obviously much skinnier than Harrison Ford. And it's so funny. He's like a gaunt version of Harrison Ford. It's really great.
Right. On that topic, who else is missing from this movie? No, Chuck Norris return.
Yeah, I mean, I thought he didn't need to be in the second movie. I don't think if he was never a part of the Expendables, people would be up in arms or anything, because he's such a, I don't know, forgotten part of 80s action cinema. You know?
Yeah, not like...
He's remembered as a meme, not as an actor.
Oh, yeah, especially now. Like, if you were to tell these people who were making all those Chuck Norris jokes, like, whatever, 7 years ago now or whenever it was.
Yeah, it was like 2005.
Name me two Chuck Norris movies.
Delta Force 1, Delta Force 2.
Touched by an Angel, the film? I don't know.
The film based on the TV series.
Yeah.
Based on the TV movie. I have never seen a Chuck Norris movie in full, you know? And right. I watch more movies than the average person, and I watch more action movies than the average person as well. So, and have basically spent my entire youth watching whatever action movie I could see. And when I got to the Chuck Norris section of the action section, I decided to watch something else again, I guess, you know? So, I mean, he's not an integral part of action cinema or action cinema's history.
Right. Speaking of you watching action movies, Steven Seagal is absent from this.
Yes. I feel like his name has been bandied about for all three of these movies in some portion, and he's not ended up in them.
Why is that?
Steven Seagal, even more than most of these people in these movies, does not have an accurate view of where he stands in culture. He's the least self-aware person possibly that's ever existed. And I think he, no matter what role Stallone offered him, Seagal would think if it's not like Statham's role in the first Expendables movie, which again is very much sort of like a 50-50 thing, Seagal would think he is slumming it, you know? Right. And I think that's it. I honestly think Seagal is that crazy.
Okay.
Which further continues my fascination with Steven Seagal. I will never stop trying to figure him out.
Okay, and on a similar note, Jackie Chan was offered a role, but he said unless it's like a major role, he's not going to do it.
Is that for real?
100% that's for real.
Oh my god, that is news.
Like, that's not even just IMDb trivia, which, oh, did you look at the trivia for this movie?
No.
Oh my god.
Should I?
Okay, I'll explain the only thing you're really missing.
Okay.
So yes, IMDb trivia is not the source for good information. It can be very interesting at times, but often somewhat tenuous connection to reality, let's say.
Often, if you can't find a second reference point for it, then don't trust it.
Okay, so I will read verbatim this piece of IMDb trivia for you.
I can't wait.
Originally, Sylvester Stallone planned to have Tim Curry cameo as Pennywise the Clown, but later decided against it as it would not fit his vision of a kid-friendly third outing. Do you know who Pennywise the Clown is?
Am I going to get killed on the boards for saying no?
No. No. The evil clown from Stephen King's It.
What?
I don't know. Like, I almost didn't bring it up because it's clearly so ridiculous, but I thought you would appreciate how far.
Oh my God, that's so great. So remember when we were talking about how IMDb trivia is not always based in fact? That statement does not apply to the Pennywise the Clown trivia, which is obviously true.
Obviously true. Yeah.
Jesus, that's amazing. No, Jackie Chan would have been great.
I don't know why he thinks he's such a huge star now. Like, Around the World in 80 Days or that Tuxedo Jacket
that's 10
movie?
Years ago. That's even older.
That had Jennifer Love Hewitt in it.
I know. Both of those movies bombed. He's not thinking that's the reason why he's a big star. Like, big his movies that were actually successful. I don't think Jackie Chan acts a lot in American movies anymore. I think partially by choice and partially by because America's done with him. But again, it's like the Willis thing. I see where he's coming from. Maybe he just didn't want to do it unless it had a real chance to sort of give him a new, really rehabilitate his career. And a big part of Jackie Chan's career relies on physical things that he just can't do anymore, probably, you know?
Right.
Yeah. He would have to be able to do what Wesley Snipes' stunt double does in this movie to have a viable career in Hollywood still. And yeah. I mean, to his credit, he did that stuff much longer than makes sense. He's like 42 in Rush Hour 2, and some of the stuff he pulls off is bananas.
That guy's amazing.
Yeah.
And, this one is actually true, but Jean-Claude Van Damme said that Stallone might include him in this movie. Did you hear that?
No, I wish.
Okay, so this is like a few years ago now. And you're going to love this. So who did he play in Expendables 2?
Jean Valjean.
You know who he was saying he was indicated by Stallone to play in Expendables 3?
His character from JCVD, maybe?
You're not that far off. Claude Valjean, brother of Jean Valjean.
Not even getting Jeremy Irons to play his brother.
No, couldn't even do that much.
Yeah. That's funny.
Was there any other part that we haven't discussed of this movie that you liked?
I thought the casting of Robert Davi was a nice touch.
Who?
Robert Davi. He's the Armenian mafia guy or something, whatever that guy with the fedora was. You know, he's one of the Johnsons and Die Hard. He's got a history of being in some of these Starz action movies. And I thought that was a really funny touch. Part of it is I just didn't know he was in this movie. So when he came on screen, I was like, that is exactly who should have been cast in this role. I thought that was good. I don't have anything else that I particularly liked about this movie that we haven't mentioned.
Okay.
This movie is not good. It ended. We didn't mention that part. It ended.
Right. Okay. So then, we'll take a few steps back and kind of look at this movie altogether. We were talking about in a recent podcast we did about kind of Hollywood star power diminishing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we talked about this on Dawn of the Planet of the Apes and last week on the Oceans movies.
Right.
Yeah.
Kind of just saying that, you know, it used to be a long, long time ago, you know, you put whatever, Cary Grant, old example, in your movie and people just show up. And this was, you know, even not even that long ago, obviously, but before kind of social media, before word of mouth had so much to do with how much your money your movie made, kind of your cast list could at least get you a few weekends.
Yeah.
Whereas now, if you have a bad movie, no matter who's in it, it's a bad movie and not go and see it.
Yeah.
And we talked about how properties are kind of more important than the names of the actors.
Yeah.
So how does the Expendables franchise kind of fall into this shift? Because it's so much about names, and you know, the story, the scenes, everything is pretty pretty forgettable, but it's just the names they have attached to them.
Yeah.
Like, how do you explain kind of a modern franchise kind of sustaining itself pretty much on just names?
Well, you sort of look at the people that watched these movies, and for one, again, I remember seeing The Expendables, the first one, on opening day, and looking around, and I was, I guess, 24 when that movie came out, and was the youngest person in the audience for sure. There were other people slightly older than me, but it was mostly, 40 plus and up, or 40 plus people. This is also Friday at 1 p.m. I'm confused as to why they weren't at work, but it's these people that kind of were of age when these movies were on the top of the box office. And it's a bit of nostalgia mixed with a bit of the idea of bringing back something that no longer exists, like Dolph Lundgren making a Somali pirate explode. And it was sort of a...
Simpler times, you know.
Well, and that happened consistently in the 80s when an action movie was just going to be rated R. And then through the 90s, it sort of transitioned a bit. And then in the early 2000s, you really started to see, and even with those Jerry Bruckheimer action movies, that really started to be aiming for PG-13 as opposed to an R-rated audience more often than not. And it's sort of this combination of... nostalgia for something you wish still existed in two different levels. You know, you've got the action movie you wish still existed and the person you wish you still got to see once every 8 months in a movie, you know? So it's just a different version of what these comic book movies are playing into a lot, as well as something you wish existed, which is a movie based on your favorite comic book property. And, you know, a face you want to see every 8 months, which is Captain America's or Thor's, you know? So it's a different version of the same thing, right?
Yeah. Okay. I was just like, even I was looking over kind of the promotional material for this movie and all the Expendables one, and so many character posters, which is something they do a lot now, but yeah. Like
the character poster for Harrison Ford's character in this movie is so funny because he's got like his leg propped up on a box. And I saw somebody tweet like a, you know, fake quote for Harrison Ford while that picture's being taken. Look at me and my indestructible leg with the Star Wars thing. It makes so goddamn funny.
And he's wearing a fanny pack.
He is not wearing a fanny pack.
Yeah, I just, so much of the way that these movies were sold was, you know, the huge cast and the ensemble cast and all these people you knew from other things. So is that kind of what it takes to sell a movie based on actors' names now?
Yeah, exactly.
Just throw so many of them into one. Like, it's not like, oh, look, it's the new Stallone movie. It's like, it's the new Stallone-Negger, Statham, like, Jet Li, you know, just anybody you can think of who had something to do with 80s action, pretty much.
Yeah, more or less. And just action in general. I mean,
Statham wouldn't be 80s at all.
Yeah, and Stone Cold Steve Austin was part of the marketing for the first one. Randy Couture is part of the marketing for all of them. I agree. You just kind of need more of everything. It needs to be, you can still sell a movie on a star, but they have to come with eight supplementary stars. You know. And I mentioned this in passing, but the 2010 movie The Tourist, with Johnny Depp and Angelina Jolie, which made very little money in America, was kind of one of those action star movies, like not action star movies, but movie star movies. Like, say, a comparison point I thought of for is like The Mexican with Julia Roberts and Brad Pitt in like 1999, where that movie was entirely sold on these two people who are huge stars that have never been in a movie together coming together. And so is The Tourist. In 1999, that thought process and that ad campaign works. In 2010, it doesn't. And The Expendables comes out in 2010 and succeeds, and it's because it's got a stack of cast names as opposed to two next to each other over the title. Yeah,
it's just in that time.
The names are like physically bigger than the people in all these posters. Yeah,
That's what I was looking at the promotional material, and they just do that thing where in black text they have everyone right down the center, like everyone's name right down the center, and that's like 60% of the the frame, and then you have, you know, the actual figures of these actors taking up about like 7%. Like it's so much more about the name than anything else. And I just thought that was a kind of a comparison we were talking about recently, that you know, in order to do that now, you just have to pile it on so high, and that doesn't even last for two movies, you know. Like you have to add more people for the second one, you have to add more people for the third one. Like it's just showing the kind of the diminishing power of a name like that.
Yeah, for sure.
One thing that's interesting to me about Sly, like we're talking about him kind of as like, oh, he's this 80s action star. Like, let's think about him like Bruce Willis, and let's think about him like Schwarzenegger. But I think the interesting thing to me about Sly is how much he's kind of controlled his destiny, and kind of, I think even from a long time ago in the 70s, I think he was looking at himself like, you know, like legend already. Like, how am I? Not in an arrogant way, but like, you know, he wrote Rocky. He wanted to direct Rocky. And then when it comes to things like...
And refused to sell the script for Rocky unless they let him play Rocky.
Yeah, exactly. And then, you know, he's directed a lot of movies. Like, I know he didn't direct Expendables, but...
He directs the first Expendables, not the new one.
Yeah, and then has he's still doing kind of the story for these ones. And he's just always been kind of more control of his destiny and his appearance and kind of what people think of him. And, like, I think he does get lumped together with these people who are just actors, but I don't really think that does him justice. So I just wanted to get your opinion on Sly versus, you know, most of these other people in these movies who never write or rarely write, if ever. Maybe they'll produce some things, but it just seems like Stallone is so much more hands-on about how he's going to be perceived. And I think when all said and done, he'll have done more to shape his career than someone like Schwarzenegger who shows up and reads a script does. And I don't mean, you know, that's not to dig at Schwarzenegger at all. It's just I think maybe sometimes people forget how much Stallone does off the screen. So I just wanted to know what you thought about kind of where that places him in the legend status.
Yeah, I would agree with that to an extent. I think most of these actors are, I mean, I don't think I'm saying anything crazy here, but, most of these actors have been boiled down to something less than what they actually were at their highest point, or at their best point. I think the problem with Stallone, in the way you're talking about him is, he wrote Rocky, good script. And he deserves residuals on pretty much every sports movie made since then. But after that, his output as an actor as well, but as pretty much anything, it's really spotty. Like, I liked Rocky Balboa. I thought that was a well-written and well-directed movie. The Expendables, for what it is the first one, is a pretty well-directed movie. That's about it as far as his non-acting creative power. And I'm sure he's sort of wielded his influence on some of the movies he's been in. But for the most part, I think, yes, he has controlled his career, but not necessarily in a way that's good. And I think that's how a lot of people might forget. If he had directed a really great movie, like if Cliffhanger was... Did he direct Cliffhanger or was that Rennie Harlan? Either way, I can't remember. But if he had directed something that was really great, then maybe people would remember him as more than an actor. But he kind of hasn't. And so I think, yes, he's probably underrated as somebody that isn't as dumb as how we think he is. But he also really built that image himself by the way he was in the 80s. And he's talked about this. He totally lost control of... the idea of being human and just sort of played into the idea of being a star and was really into that. And, that's what Rocky Balboa is all about. And, to a lesser extent, there's a little bit of that in Copland, but,
which is a great movie.
It's a very good movie. Yeah. And he's very good in it. But yeah, he just isn't in enough really good stuff for us to take the rest of the stuff seriously. You know,
yeah, I suppose I don't mean it as, you know, kind of looking at it through the qualitative lens, but, you know, The Expendables doesn't exist without him.
Correct.
Expendables 3 doesn't exist without him, which is not a compliment. it's just that I don't know. Like, I think that these movies, you know, as goofy as they are, and as we said earlier, like, sometimes I think they're focused more on being a meme than being a solid piece of movie making. Like, yeah. I know they never intended this being great art, but I just mean as being a passable standalone action yeah. movie.
I would have appreciated a 2-star movie, yeah, as opposed to this.
Yeah. I just think that kind of the people will think of this and think of Rocky Balboa as being kind of what forms the way that we think about him long term, like, say, 30 years down the road when he's dead. I think he just had more, like, I think of someone like LeBron James, who came in, I think, from the get-go, kind of looked at, like, how is history going to remember me? And mm-hmm. I think Stallone had a kind of a grasp quickly on, I'm going to be around for a while, and people's perception of me depends on the decisions I make, not just what someone puts in my hands and I yeah. read. So I, you know, he can make these terrible movies and he can direct shit for, you know, until he dies. But I think just something needs to be said for at least his attempt at putting himself where he wants to be put.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think Tom Cruise is a decent comparison point for what you're talking about. Tom Cruise, the scripts for his movies always change dramatically after he comes to be a part of them.
Right.
He's never directed a movie as far as I know. But he's a very powerful producer on anything that he's a part of. And, I mean, you mentioned, Copland, but that director James Mangold, when he was making 310 to Yuma with Tom Cruise, was initially attached, and Mangold said after Tom Cruise left that, like, the project was so much better for having had his input, you know. Right. And I think that's something about Tom Cruise that always gets swept under the rug, and I think it's just a bigger example of what you're talking about with Stallone. I do think you're kind of underrating Schwarzenegger's view of where he is and where he should be, and just his ability to pick good projects, which is something that Stallone doesn't have. And I think that's a different kind of power that Schwarzenegger has more of than Stallone. Like, Schwarzenegger does less as a producer, but makes better choices in general. And when they were superstars. And I think that's worth talking about too, if we're talking about what Stallone has done. Yeah.
Right, and maybe kind of to the point where it's been detrimental to Stallone, like when his son committed suicide recently, a lot of people are saying, like, was this kind of a lack of parenting? Like, was he too focused on himself and his own career? Yeah. And you just have to imagine he would ask himself questions like that, as anyone would. But yeah. Was, like, a huge film buff and just – it was so fascinated with Hollywood and cinema. Mm-hmm. And, you know, is it just something that Stallone has been kind of more focused on this than some of the other things, and has been, you know, too much? And
yeah.
Maybe that's what, you know, you can see him still kind of working at it and still trying to shape his legend and still putting these projects together and getting everyone together and saying, like, maybe this is how people are going to remember us now.
Yeah.
That maybe other actors in a similar position, like Schwarzenegger, don't have to deal with.
Yeah. I think the thing that we're kind of talking about is that, once you are in the position to be a legend, you stop having control over shaping your legend. You know, there's a certain level of fame that you can attain. And once you attain that role, or that position, you lose control over how people perceive you entirely. And I think that's kind of it. Stallone got so big that, and Schwarzenegger got so big, Tom Cruise got so big, Bruce Willis, that, and Harrison Ford, that they've all just lost control over the ability to control how we see them, you know?
Right.
And yeah, Stallone can keep trying, but I don't think it's going to change anything. And I don't think you're saying that, you know, if he makes The Expendables 4 into an incredibly powerful dramatic film, that the opinion's going to change. People would be very surprised if that happened. But yeah, I just sort of think he to get in a position where he has this control, he kind of loses control over how he's perceived.
Gotcha. what are your hopes for Expendables 4?
Non-existent.
That doesn't exist. Well,
when I saw Expendables 2 on opening weekend, not opening day, but the first weekend, and with people that I've spent a lot of time watching old action movies with, and I would say people with lower expectations than even me for a movie like this, and we were all extremely disappointed. Like, it's real bad.
Right. Yeah. Well, can I hype you up about number 4?
Yeah, sure. Jean-Claude Van Damme coming back playing his brother.
One person you like, one person I think you don't hate.
Okay.
Pierce Brosnan.
Okay.
And Hulk Hogan.
Great.
Have talked about being approached for fourth Expendables.
Well, I feel like if anybody over the age of 50 talked about being approached for this movie, I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah. Oh, and Alex's parents have also been approached for Expendables 4.
Yeah. Stallone, Statham, Lee, Kate, Glenn.
She just needs to wear her classic Canada Post apron that we all know and love her for.
Yeah, maybe they can be the people that run the bar that serves the Budweiser.
Awesome. Okay, well, I think we've done enough.
Now that my parents have become a part of the conversation. Thank you for listening to the MacGuffin Man. Be sure to check back next time we have an episode at themacguffinman.com. Follow us on iTunes, The MacGuffin Man, all one word. Subscribe, give us a 5-star rating. Or a 1-star rating if you, I mean, let's be honest, if you think we're really bad, feel free to give us a 1-star, but we think we're 5 stars. My parents think we're 5 stars. So
when you're talking about Expendables 2 and your extremely low expectations, your low expectations of Expendables 3 and how they were like negative, I think you were hoping like 2 thumbs amputated. Your guess of how good this movie was going to be, and that you probably got it right.
More or less, yeah. So yeah, check out themacguffinman.com for all of our other content. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to The MacGuffin Men. Be sure to check out themacguffinmen.com for supplementary links, articles, and more. Thanks for listening.